afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Negler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Happy Monday. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you enjoyed that big Brewers victory that literally just wrapped up right before going live here. Packers back on the practice field, albeit in a limited capacity, a very slow, no pads, no fans in the stands affair. But most importantly, the headline being Jordan Love back on the practice field. Good to see him participating in drill work and in some 7-on-7 situations. No full team stuff for Jordan yet, but just great to see him back out there, including just ripping a few throws and doing stuff football-wise, not just drill work. I know Matt LaFleur has talked about how he's not the world's biggest fan of 7-on-7 stuff, but I think it makes all the sense in the world to get Jordan out there in that kind of capacity as soon as possible. Essentially missing one practice with the thumb procedure and obviously the preseason game, which he probably wasn't going to play in anyway. So I think that's a really good kind of turn of events for the Packers and Jordan Love to miss a real minimal amount of time. Hopefully this gets ramped up throughout the week. I still suspect he won't be a full go Thursday against the Seahawks. We'll see about any participation in the preseason game. It's very early yet in the week, but like I said, a big step to get Jordan back on the practice field, including another guy coming back in Romeo Doubs, who clearly missed the joint practice in Indy dealing with that back issue that he suffered during the last practice that they had at Reinicke Field. He was back out there today, which is encouraging. Unfortunately, the back seems to be a theme. Romeo Doubs coming back from a back issue. We had a couple new names to add to the did not participate list in Kenny Clark and Lucas Van Ness, along with Aaron Banks, all of them dealing with back issues of one form or another. No word on the severity yet. Hopefully we'll get some news on that regard either through the evening or tomorrow when Matt LaFleur speaks. Another guy who didn't participate was Jacob Monk, dealing with a hamstring injury, along with Savion Williams, who is also dealing with a hamstring after dealing with a shoulder last week. Tell you what, Savion Williams, I know a lot has been talked about regarding Marshawn Lloyd and how snake bit he's been, but man, Savion Williams has had a very rough summer trying to stay healthy, trying to get out on the field. And when he's been out there, he's looked promising. He has looked dangerous, but he simply hasn't been able to string any number of practices together. It feels like every time he's out there, something new is nagging at him and causing him to drop out, and then he's missing another practice. And that was the case today. Hopefully, maybe he's back out there tomorrow when they're in pads and there's a full kind of contingent of fans in the stands and people get to see him running around, because he is an exciting young rookie. I know Matthew Golden's been getting all the pub for good reason, but Williams has been exciting when he's been on the field. That said, you know, that tomorrow and Thursday are your two final, like, really good looks at the Packers in a practice situation, and then the preseason game, and then that's all she wrote for training camp, which is kind of wild. I mean, it happens each and every summer, it seems. You blink, and all of a sudden, everything's done, and that's certainly the week we are heading into. But, of course, we'll cover it all for you here at Cheesehead TV. We are devoted to Packers fans worldwide. It's what we do, folks. Thank you to everybody chiming in here, except for the person saying fire the trainers. They literally did 2 years ago. Whole strength and conditioning staff went out the door. They got a whole new set. Guys are still getting injured. You know why? Because they play football. People get hurt. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. All right, everybody, before we get to your questions and your comments, you guys know I got to give a shout out to our good friends over at Ticket King. Based in Wisconsin since 1992, Ticket King is located across the street from Lambeau Field on Oneida. They're happy to help you find just the right tickets for Packers games, from larger groups to single tickets, both home and away. They partner with local Green Bay businesses for bus transportation to the games, so you don't have to worry about driving or parking. They're even open on game day for last-minute tickets or possible upgrades. And if you're not in Green Bay, no problem. Just use the Ticket King link on the Cheesehead TV homepage, or indeed, in the description of this video. Don't use Ticketmaster, StubHub, SeatGeek, none of these national companies. Use a company based in Wisconsin since the early 90s, Ticket King, for all your Packers ticket needs. Speaking of Packers tickets, you want to be at that home opener, because holy Toledo, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, finally this morning we announced our first ever kickoff party for Cheesehead TV Saturday, September 6th, kicking off at 7 p.m. That's the night before the regular season opener. Of course, Corey and I will be in attendance. We'll be drinking some Carry the G. Hope to see you all there. Talk some Packers. Get ready for the season with a very special live performance by Motel Men. That's right. My band will be playing. So, God forbid, just get there early because we won't play until 9. So, you know, you get there at 7, get about 2 hours of drinking in, and then you can either leave or you can stay and make fun of me. But either way, it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope to see you guys there. Like I said, we've never done this before. We've talked about it a few times as far as having some kind of event at the home opener, but it's always been week 2 or 3 under LaFleur and really hasn't kind of felt right. But man, the first home opener for the season since LaFleur has been in town felt like the right time. We're going to kick it off. We're going to have a really, really good time Saturday night before the first regular season game. I hope to see each and every one of you there. Because, man, we're going to drink some Carry the G, we're going to talk ball, and we're going to have a good time. And maybe there'll be some dancing to go along with the music. We'll never know how people might respond to the tunes and the grooves when the Carry the G is flowing. What's going on, everybody? Good to see you, everybody. How you all doing? Chuck is here. Jim, what's up, Jim? I love it. We have Andy Herman's Pack-A-Day promoting SeatGeek with Cheesehead TV is promoting Ticket King. Sounds like conflicting messages. Not at all. Not at all. You can utilize one or the other. Just support your local brands. That's all I ask. I got so many Brewers comments in here. Fly the L, the Cubs. I love it. I love it, people. Tulio, thank you very much for the kind words about Motel Men. Really appreciate that. Soder, what's going on, man? Thanks for checking out the stream as always. That off-season O-line depth talk has been reduced to Morgan and Walker. We'll just make it work. Welcome to the NFL in 2025. I mean, it hasn't helped that Jacob Monk has had a really unfortunate summer. Something I talked with Justice about a couple days ago when we were looking at the roster and some of the position battles. You guys know, if you've been on this channel for any length of time, man, I really liked Jacob Monk at the end of last summer. I thought he was headed in the right direction, but it has just not materialized for him in any meaningful way this summer. He's had a real rough camp, obviously had a really rough outing against the Jets. He was somewhat better against the Colts, though that's a low bar. Yeah, that depth piece, so to speak, has really started to wear thin, as it were. And no word on Oliver yet. He is still on PUP, which is unfortunate. But, you know, what's interesting is that I remember when they drafted him and he met with the local media, he straight up said, oh, I'll be ready for camp, because they drafted him having, you know, come off of the issue in college. And it sounds like that has just lingered way past the point that they expected it to. I know when we got to the start of training camp, Brian Gutekunst had indicated it would be a couple weeks. They expected him back, hopefully by the first preseason game. Clearly, that has not happened. And very frustrating for a guy you would hope will be able to add a little something to the pass rush. Now it really feels like that will not happen, at least early in the season for sure. Joe, what's going on, man? Thanks for the super chat. When Glover went down, I thought Pack had lost their number 9 O-line. Seems more like number 7 right now. Should they have given Belton reps at guard? Who is number 2 left guard? Number 2 left guard, most likely, I would suspect, if Banks were to go down, which is what I'm assuming you're referring to, they'd probably slide Elton over and have Sean Ryan play center and then put Morgan at right guard. That would be my guess. Should they have given Belton reps at guard? I know they have been open to that idea, and they keep talking that they might do that in the future. But no, I have no issue with them running him at tackle. It's the premier position, it's the more important position, and you want the young man to come in and get his feet wet and or secured at one spot, a guy you're not most likely ever going to count on in any meaningful way his rookie year. I don't mind running him at one spot. It's kind of what I wish they would have done with Jordan Morgan. And I know they wanted to get him on the field, but and the clearest path was at guard, but I don't think it's that big a issue. As far as the interior depth, I will be fascinated to see how it goes about as far as the final cuts and or waiver wire additions or possibly even trades. over the course of the next week or so. I believe we have until the 26th of August, which is a cut down day. So I would suspect there may be a move or two in the future in that regard. E4, what's going on, man? Thanks for the super chat. Ministers, priests, rabbis, shaman, whatever floats each player's boat, have them all in the tunnel doing their thing to prevent injuries. I don't know what to tell you, guys. Guys get hurt. It's the way it is. It's how you mitigate and handle those injuries that plays such a big role in your success. Week in, week out, season in, season out. That is a major component of NFL roster management, the coaching staff and how they handle playtime and things like that. It is a big, big component to success in the NFL. J-Rock, that's a really good question. I can't give you a very detailed answer, but can you explain in layman's terms what the install period is like for the O and the D? I will say it varies from team to team, and they're not very forthcoming with details as far as what exactly they are working on each and every session, certainly from taking from the classroom to the practice field. I will say, you know, the kind of 30,000 foot version of it is you're going through everything you studied in the off season, right? As far as concepts, what your point of emphasis is, usually there's two or three of them in a playbook in each concept for each concept and how it works within the intricacies of the offense. Because a lot of what you'll see in, say, offensive play calling is your protection, what each group is tasked with doing, whether it is, you know, starting with the O-line with protection or wide receivers, skill positions, tight ends. You kind of usually traditionally old school, you work inside out. And then what the backs are doing, and each guy has, I'm not going to say two or three concepts, but they have concepts within each play call that they are tasked with, and they have to know each and every one of them. And it's one thing to do it in a classroom and you can drill it and test it, you know, mentally each and every day. But until you put it on its feet, doesn't mean a whole lot. You have to make sure you're able to take it from your head to your feet and your body and what have you. So they will go through all these concepts and eventually they will get on the practice field. And sometimes you'll hear us talk about when we're at practice, the working red zone, right? Or situational stuff, end of game, end of half, trying to get in position to get a field goal or whatever. But within those play calls, you're installing, quote unquote, concepts within play calls that then you have to, you are tasked with going out and executing and knowing what the hell it is you're doing each and every play. Basically it's running every kind of concept slash play. It's not down to the letter, but every single one of them that you may ever call upon during the season, having them on the ground and on the grass at least one time, and probably hopefully more than once, but at least one time so that it's in your body as a player to reinforce what you learned in the classroom. And you go through the entirety of the playbook. And once it's done, you'll hear, usually it's Spoon who asks coach if you're done with install. And usually this is the week around the end of this week where they get done with install. Again, that's not a very drilled down answer. It's a very, very 30,000 foot answer because they are very cagey and very guarded about what it is exactly they're working on each and every day to some extent and how, what their process is. I've tried to ask Matt something like this each and every summer, and it's always very, very vague answering. This year I asked him about, you know, determining what guys are doing each and every day in the practice field as a staff and how it funnels up to him as a head coach to have conversations about guys, especially lower on the depth chart. Are they taking in the information? Are you seeing that transfer to more consistency? How do you have the conversation where, you know, okay, this kid might be ready to come up and play with the twos or the ones even. I asked that, but Matt was very dismissive on purpose because they don't want to get too detailed about their operation, which I understand and I respect it. That's a very long-winded answer. I would also highly recommend you read, there's a book that Pat Kerwin wrote years ago that is still pretty relevant. There's some out-of-date stuff in there, but I can't remember the name of it, but look for Pat Kerwin's book on football, NFL football, that he does a great job of laying out what an NFL team goes through each and every week of the season. But then he also talks about offseason, training camp, and what have you. He does a really good job of laying out kind of some of the particulars that coaches and teams go through in regards to install periods and things like that. It's a really good book. Just can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. Brandy, thanks for the super chat. The NFL reduced the amount of preseason games several years ago. How has that impacted the Packers' ability to get ready for, quote, real games? Thoughts? I think it has and it hasn't. I think you've seen, especially in the course of the last 4 years or so, way more joint practices, right? Certainly under Matt, that has been a focal point. And I think that is incredibly valuable. In fact, more valuable than preseason games to some extent. Simply because you can work on a lot more. It's not broadcast, so the teams are way more open as far as what they're calling and what they're working on schematically. Certainly, there's still value in the preseason games. I don't think they're going away anytime soon. I think we're about to get one less when they go to 18 games. But, I think it's certainly, if you talk to personnel people, you talk to the GMs and the scouts and things like that, they are not big fans of the preseason going away because to them, they really like to see guys in live action. And that's the one time you really get live stuff outside of a handful of sessions in practices where maybe they might tackle to the ground. Although that is very rare in Green Bay. It happens a little bit more other places, but so personnel guys love preseason games for that reason. It's live. It's the one kind of live stuff you get on these younger players in particular to see how they react, to see how they're kind of taking what it is they've done in kind of 75% speed in practice or even 90% speed, but no hitting, no tackling, et cetera. And then translating that to actual game action for the first time in the NFL. For the personnel folks, that's valuable, right? As fans sitting on the outside looking, it can get kind of boring. There's no doubt about that. I mean, preseason by the third quarter, usually, you know, you're watching deep reserves. You're watching mostly guys who aren't going to be in the league. You know, and the play calls are pretty vanilla and it does, you know, the product is tough to watch at times. But again, for personnel folks, evaluators, it is gold, especially again for young players. That's where the value is. So I think they'll continue to lean on that. But the joint practices are where most of the kind of major evaluation stuff by the coaching staff is going to take place from now and going forward, most likely. What else we got here, folks? Brother Blood, it's an interesting question. How do you feel about the Packers offense so far? It's really hard to get a handle on it with so many guys missing so much time. You know, with the wide receivers in particular. I mean, at the start of camp, it was pretty exciting to see Matthew Gold making as many plays as he did each and every day. I think you've seen Luke Musgrave really have a much better and more productive summer than he had last year. Of that, there's zero doubt. On balance, it's impossible to get a good read on the running game because, again, like I was saying, like, yes, there is certainly blocking and kind of thud tackling, but there's no real content. I mean, the ball carrier is not allowed to be taken to the ground, so I can't get a good handle on, is this defense really kind of making that push, or are they, you know, letting up because they can't tackle the guy? Or, you know, it's hard to get an idea of how effective the run game is until we get into live situations. I think Jordan's looked good. I think he's looked like Jordan Love. I think he's a rhythm guy and he needs to get in rhythm and then he can be deadly, but he doesn't always start off in rhythm. And that's a tough way to live. But yeah, as far as like any new concepts or way they were going to incorporate a guy like Golden or Savion Williams, it's just been real tough because so much has been kind of juggling the personnel at the skill positions due to injuries. You know, a lot of it's been installed too, so it's really hard to get any kind of an idea of what they want to lean on, what they're really hoping is their bread and butter this summer or this season. But I tell you what, the pieces are all there. There's zero doubt about that. The talent's there. Anything they want to do on offense, they can do, but they got to be healthy or at least relatively healthy. And they got to gel at some point early in the season, which I think they can do. But again, it's going to probably take a game or two for that stuff to really kind of iron out, I would suspect. That's it. Thank you so much, Dennis or Towel Jr. Take Your Eye Off the Ball. That was the name of the Pat Kerwin book. Thank you for the reminder. It's a very, very informative read for anybody who wants to get kind of behind the scenes in the NFL. And again, it is somewhat dated. Some of the stuff is certainly kind of no longer prevalent or relevant here and there, but the meat and potatoes of it is still very, very, very interesting and relevant to the NFL. No doubt about it. Soder, I don't know about this. No Jacobs means no power runs, and that means no idea about the offense. Maybe to some extent, but I also think they've certainly utilized a couple of different guys in power situations, and they've looked good. I mean, hell, I think both Abanaconda and Johnson had a number of nice runs on Saturday against the Colts, or certainly power concepts. And I think Chris Brooks has shown that he can be a power guy. But as far as not having a good handle on Jacobs, yeah, you're right. You know, we haven't seen a ton of him in live action. We haven't seen a ton of him working along with the presumed first team offensive line. So again, it just becomes really hard, you know, as far as trying to like project what they might look like or how productive they might be. Sandy, thanks for the super chat. Your opinion on the Bears-Bills game? I wish I could give one. I didn't watch it. I don't care about the Bears. I saw the score bug, got a lot of people upset, and it looked fine to me. But the Bears are doing what they're doing because they have a new coach who's trying to install a lot of stuff and instill a lot of stuff in his group. And the Bills are in a very different spot as far as their program goes. I think, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure I read that, you know, the Bears were playing some, if not a lot of starters, and the Bills were playing a bunch of backups to begin, much like we saw kind of in the Colts game with the Packers. You know, the Packers have a much more established program, you know, so what they're working on and looking for in this game is very different than what the Colts were looking for. And I think that's very similar in the Bears-Bills game. But that was my only takeaway. Like I said, I didn't watch it. I don't care about the Bears. It's very rare that I'm going to go out of my way to watch the Bears. But that was my opinion on the Bears-Bills game. Tulio, you're too kind. Thank you, brother. Pat Kerwin knows his stuff. I miss listening to him on NFLXM. Yeah, that was a really good show. He and Jim Miller used to do a show together. And Jim is a legend, man. He's so good on the radio, breaking down the game. You actually had been on Cheesehead TV when we first started. Good stuff. Peter, thanks for checking out the stream on Facebook. Nags, what I've seen so far in preseason looks like we are going to be in again for a slow start. Entirely possible. They could shock you and come out and put up 35 on the Lions. That's why we watch, right? I wouldn't put too much stock into anything you see in preseason. It doesn't mean a whole lot. Either their preparedness or their physicality, which is what people always like to point to, things like that. What you see in preseason has very little bearing on what happens in the regular season, including week one. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't come out and lay an egg and be slow starting. Like, that is entirely possible, but it's not because they didn't play their starters against the Colts or anything like that. You know, that is very, very immaterial. Brandy, thanks again. Gary gets pressure on opposing QBs. Is this as effective as actual sacks? Seems teams go to the quick game to mitigate this. Frustrates me sometimes. It probably frustrates him too. And yes, you are correct. They do love a quick game and they like sliding protection towards Gary. And he was one of the top 5-6 most chipped pass rushers in the NFL last year. So yeah, he gets attention. And that is why it is going to be so sweet if Lucas Van Ness can take the proverbial step that it seems like he's taking this summer. But again, none of this means a whole lot till he does it in games that matter. But yeah, Gary, I'm sure, is frustrated. And I'm with you. He gets pressure. He affects the quarterback, which is what you want. Sometimes the issue can become he'll get upfield and leave open lanes for quarterbacks or allow kind of escape lanes for quarterbacks. He didn't do as much of that last year. He got much better in that regard. But over the course of his career, he's had a bad habit of kind of overshooting the pocket, right, and allowing the quarterback to step out and up into whatever lane he just vacated, right? But for the most part, I'm 100 billion percent with the former outside linebackers coach in Green Bay, Mike Smith, who you know, he would get up there at the podium and just preach about the importance of pressure. And he didn't care about sacks. Sacks will come, he would say. And I totally agree. I clipped it and put it on my Twitter years ago, and I still maintain it's 100% spot on. The sack is just a stat. And yes, it's an important stat, and it's nice if you get them. It's great when you get them in bunches. But more than anything, you want to affect the quarterback. There are plenty of plays throughout the course of a football season where an edge rusher or even a defensive tackle affects how the quarterback is able to do his job, whether that is having to tuck it and run, whether that it is off-platform throw that then ends up as an interception. As long as you're affecting the quarterback, you're doing your job, right? People are always going to look at sack numbers. It's the way of the world. I understand it. But pressuring the quarterback, affecting the quarterback, that's the name of the game more than anything else. This is the gospel according to Mike Smith, and I 100% am an apostle. All right, everybody, I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please, please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.